International House of Horrors.
Hello and welcome to a new episode of the International House of Horrors. Joe's still gone, but the last week he said next week he's gonna be back, so let's hope so. And instead I brought a guest back we just had last week, but we all couldn't get enough of Maike, so she's back. Welcome back, Maike.
Hello.
So, we're recording at a late time today. We just came from like playing a role-playing game for like 4 hours, 5 hours, around that. So we might not be completely up to standard, but I think we'll manage to do a good episode anyway, especially because we picked a topic that Maike is very interested in. And so once again, she did the research. But before we start, I just want to get two things out of the way. The first thing is that after we talked about urban legends and creepypasta last week, if you haven't listened yet, go back and listen because it's a great episode. That's not what I say, that's what everyone told me. But also, Maike mentioned one creepypasta in particular that's called, I think the title is Candy Cove.
Yeah, Candle Cove.
Candle Cove, exactly, I'm sorry. Which, for anyone who doesn't remember, is about this television show where people started writing out creepy things they saw on a television show that never existed, really. It's all just a creepypasta. But someone got the idea, let's make an actual show out of it. Well, not out of, like, they didn't make a show out of the creepypasta, but instead made a show around it. So it's the show is called I can't remember the name. It's Channel Zero. Exactly. Thank you. The show is called Channel Zero. And Joe told me about this show a long time ago. He told me I should watch it because it's really good. And I started watching it. It is really good after he told me that it's about Candle Cove. And they actually took the title of Candle Cove. But it's about these kids who watch it and then go crazy and
that's cool.
Kill someone. And so we also get scenes from the show, and it's really creepy.
Are they as disturbing as you would imagine?
What we see, we don't see that much yet. I'm 3 episodes in. I think it's only 6 episodes, but the 3 I've seen, we got some mostly stuff that looks like really badly made, like it's hand puppets running around, and we get some disturbing imagery already. But I'm never sure. I think this is always just in dreams that happens to people. We don't get like actual full episodes of the show that are really creepy. Oh. They're like kind of like if they would run on TV, I would be a bit disturbed. But they're not not as fucked up as I imagined from what you told me. But maybe they'll go deeper into that. Also, it's. If I saw that correctly, it's written or at least produced by Max Landis, who he made the most recent Victor Frankenstein. I think he's usually a writer. He wrote Chronicle, I think. In general, he's very on time and in pop culture, so it makes sense to me that he would go in that kind of like creepypasta way, because I think he has a YouTube channel. He's more on the social media side. I'm just gonna turn the sound of my computer down so it doesn't annoy us. The second thing, so this is the first thing I wanted to get out of the way. The second thing is, it's not really a horror movie, but this is a movie I really want to mention really quick, because I think everyone should see it, and also I really want people to see it so that it makes lots of money, because a movie that, actually, when I heard about it, I wasn't interested in it at all. I saw trailers, I saw pictures, I wasn't interested at all. But I really wanted to go to the cinema on Monday, I think. And because my dad wanted to see this movie, I said, okay, let's go. And we went and saw Alita Battle Angel, which is actually really good. Like, it's fun. It's based on a manga.
Yeah.
And have you read the manga?
Because I've read the first two issues, I think. Okay. I didn't read all the way through.
Okay. So the movie is based on the first six issues.
Ah, okay.
Which is, as far as I've heard, still mostly set up. So this is setting up a sequel. There has to be a sequel to this. And what's really interesting, and that's why I bring it up even on this show, is even though it's not a horror movie, it's still a manga. It's really close to the manga, and so we have these really disturbing scenes that we don't usually get in Western cinema. And it's still PG-13, probably mostly because it's all cyborgs that are being dismembered, so there isn't a lot of red blood. But there's some really disturbing scenes in this. Like, I'm not just talking like small cuts or something. No, it's really, really fucked up in parts, which you wouldn't expect. But in the end, it makes sense because it's by Robert Rodriguez, who is a really great director, but he does really fucked up things. He also did the Spy Kids movies, so you never know with him. But in this, he actually went was really good. Like, it's a perfect mix. Even the 3D, which I'm not a fan of at all usually, the 3D looked really good. I would say it's worth to see in cinemas in 3D.
Oh, okay.
And everyone should see it because I wanted to make lots of money. Like, this is, it's so weird because I'm usually not a fan of James Cameron, because for me, he's always like the studio system. He always makes like Avatar, which is it's not a bad movie, but it just felt like just push all the money in it, make a big studio movie. And so usually, but he really put his heart into Alita Battle Angel. Like, he meant to, he wanted to do this for at least 20 years now. But when he started to want to do it, there wasn't the technology there to make it. And now he's like forever making Avatar movies. So he got Robert Rodriguez to do it, and it's really good. Also, there's these big eyes that people are complaining about.
Yeah, that's really creepy. I saw it in the trailers, and I thought I couldn't watch a movie with people who have these big eyes.
But you gotta know, it's only her. And it makes sense because
she's the cyborg.
She's a cyborg, okay, so it makes sense that she doesn't look completely like a normal.
She looks a bit strange.
Yeah, but you get used to it really quickly.
Yeah.
And what they really like, she's completely like, there is an actress behind it, of course, but it's completely CGI. But they made it because it makes sense because she's a cyborg, so she looks a bit different.
Yeah.
And they went with this. They actually they didn't go like to make it as realistic as possible because they are cyborgs. So they said, okay, let's not go as far that it feels like the Uncanny Valley. So they're a bit in front of it. So it looks fake, but only in a way that cyborgs would look fake. Like, it wouldn't look like normal skin. It's more of a plastic kind of stuff.
Oh, okay.
And so since I've seen it, I'm telling everyone to see it. Like, right after I saw it, I sent to the group you're in as well, and to like two or three other groups and certain singular people that they should go see this movie because I think it's really worth watching.
You told me three times by now, so I believe you.
And this is the fourth time, basically, if we count this, but this is not for you, this is for the listeners.
For all of you.
Everyone should go see it. And it's gory enough. It's not a horror movie, but I think horror fans will like it.
That's what is impressing to me, because the manga was pretty bloody. So there was also the kind of gore which happened to cyborgs.
Yeah.
But it was because the manga is black and white, so you just saw this black blood everywhere, and you thought, oh wow, okay.
Yeah, and this the blood is green, but they go for like they go all in. Like, there's so many people and cyborgs dying in this movie that It's almost it's almost crazy that this is PG-13, really. But yeah, enough about that movie that has nothing to do with horror and nothing with today's topic. We're talking about Micah's favorite topic.
Something bloody.
Yeah. We're talking about serial killers.
Yes.
We're not like taking specifically one and just talking about him or her. So I think what we're kind of do, like, once again, Micah did all the preparation. So thank you for that.
Of course.
And if I got it correctly, you got like a big list of lots of serial killers. So we're going to do a bit of an overview of like...
I looked up some informations which I would call the essentials so that people know, okay, what is a serial killer? What do they do? And I looked up some serial killers which I thought would remind horror fans of movies they watched.
And then, I'm here to think of the movies.
Yeah. We can also talk about serial killers in horror movies, which is a part... I'm particularly interested in.
So you mean I gotta know what do you mean by serial killers in horror movies? Like Freddy Krueger? Probably not. You mean the real people, or do you mean?
No, I mean, well, let's just start with the essentials and then just let's get right onto it because
let's
like the second point on my huge list. So
okay,
I've got one bit of information I found very funny because we had last week we had Urban Legends, and as I was preparing this week's topic, I found out an urban legend, which I didn't know was an urban legend. I thought it was actual fact, so I was pretty entertained to find out. There's a thing, maybe you know it. It's called the McDonald Triad.
No.
It's about. It was published as I think a psychology paper. Or as a or inside a book, I'm not quite sure on that, but there were three factors in child's behavior which led which you when you saw them, you could assume that the child will be prone to hurt somebody, to grow up a person which could sexually assault or kill people. So they said those three things is cruelty to animals, obsession with fire setting, and bedwetting past a certain age, I think past 8-9 years old.
So those already seem like three. like it on the one hand, it makes sense that maybe a kid who already like doesn't feel empathy for animals might also not feel empathy for people.
Right.
Then okay, fire setting.
Yeah,
it's less sense than like hurting animals, but then again, it's still something that you could consider. But then,
bedwetting was strange to me too.
Yeah,
I didn't catch that one.
Yeah, maybe there's some reason behind it. They probably put something behind there.
As far as I know, they partly they interviewed people who they knew killed a lot of other people. Partly, they did research as to interviewing other people, and they compared the results, and they found out that in a lot of cases from serial killers, they told them that, well, I used to torture animals, I used to play with fire, I used to wet the bed, and then my parents got angry at me. But the funny part is, even when 50% of the serial killers tell you that, well, okay, I did those three things, that doesn't mean that all serial killers do those things, and it doesn't mean that children who do those things get to grow up as a serial killer.
Yeah.
So it was a bit strange that the people said, well, okay then, here are our three factors, that's considered science, and now that's it.
Yeah, they kind of did it like the wrong way around. Like they heard afterwards, okay, they all did this, so that must be like in a certain way. This is like 100% of all serial killers drank water.
Yes,
so really,
right.
Water is making you a serial killer.
Well, the problem is that you can find those traits, but mostly you find them in people who were abused or kind of neglected in their childhood. And that totally makes sense. But when you look at serial killers, there are serial killers in their childhood, they got abused, they made those dramatic experiences, but on the other hand, not everybody did.
Yeah.
And not everybody who has a childhood with trauma gets to be violent and hurt other people. That's not the norm.
Yeah.
So that I found it really funny because it was an urban legend and I wasn't even aware.
Yes. So in what way is it an urban legend? So this is not true at all, or like because it was found out in the afterwards.
Yeah, because studies show that this triad isn't telling you that the child is prone to be a serial killer, but at the same time, you hear it everywhere. I think you can, when you watch Criminal Minds, they always tell you, well, there are three signs, and then they tell you those signs, and then they look at their cases, and they say, oh, well, he started fires and he tortured animals. Surely he must be wearing the bat, so he's a serial killer. And just because it is everywhere, you start to believe it and you think, well, okay, it's a bit strange to me, but this seems to be how the world works, so fine.
Yeah, it's something like those. And yeah, it was on Criminal Minds, so it must be true, right?
Yeah, it must be true.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, that was kind of funny to me. But now some actual facts. because I always get a bit... I really love talking about it. I'm a bit weird like that. So I get a bit angry when people confuse mass murders and serial killers, because that's not the same thing.
Oh yeah, that's something different.
Really different.
You made the research, like I said, I didn't do any. Let me just try to take a guess.
Yeah, of course.
I would say that a serial killer... well, let's start with mass murder. A mass murder is if someone kills like lots of people, maybe even like unspecific, like not... They, him, her.
Yeah.
But like just trying to, well, a mass murder, like worst case, dropping a bomb somewhere and just killing lots of people. That's like killing lots of people in one hit and like not picking someone out to kill them specifically.
Yeah.
And then a serial killer is someone who kills multiple times, but not at the same time and probably not with these kind of things. Like he probably has some personal reason why he kills people, and like always just one at a time, or maybe two. Like you can kill more than one, but like not just dropping a bomb and killing everyone.
Yeah, that's quite accurate. Okay. You did good. I'm proud of you.
That's why I don't do research.
You don't need to.
I'm just good like that.
Yeah, that's totally accurate. So a mass murder is murdering four or more people, and like you said, it has to be in a closed location. Like when you do a school shooting, it would be considered a mass murder because you were inside the school when you murdered multiple people. But a serial killing is, well, the definitions kind of struggle. Sometimes it's three or more people. Sometimes it's two or more people. I think the FBI says it's two or more people.
Which is
actually,
I mean, just killing one person is enough already.
Yeah.
But still, two already sounds like too... This sounds really bad.
Yeah.
But it sounds too few for a serial killer.
I thought too that when you kill two people, it's like you can't really tell, was it because there was some kind of hidden agenda, or was it like those two people were connected in some way?
What if you kill someone and then someone else sees that, and so you kill them to put them out? Then you're like, it's really weird to talk about that, because I don't want to. I think they should be punished the same way as a real serial killer would. But I wouldn't even give them the same shout out, like putting them on the same pedestal.
Yeah, that's
you shouldn't put any serial killer on a pedestal.
But that's what happens a lot of times.
Yeah.
So,
we're kind of putting serial killers on a pedestal today. But let's just say right away that we condone. I think condone is a bad thing, right?
Condemn.
Yeah, we condemn them. We say no. Serial killing is bad. No, and we don't want to like let them seem like they are something heroic or something up to. Serial killers are really the worst people, and but it's also really interesting because there are these case studies, And also because there are lots of movies, especially horror movies, based on them or their things. And we're probably going to get into that really soon. But just I want to do that that right away and say we're not fans of serial killers.
No.
You know, like, right now there's this new show about Ted Bundy. And, like, already people start, like, celebrating him in this weird
that's
way.
So strange.
Yeah, and I think, like, it's really interesting. I really want to know more, but I would never say, oh, Ted Bundy is totally my favorite serial killer.
Yeah, that's it's always a strange thing to talk about them, because you don't want to glorify those people.
Mm.
Of course you don't want to, because look at what they did.
Yeah.
What horrific things they were able to do. But at the other hand, it's so interesting to look at what happened there, why did it happen, and how can one person do something like that and just go on living their lives.
And we gotta say that some of these I don't know what you exactly prepared, but there's so many serial killers that like changed public consciousness and changed pop culture in general.
That's true.
So let's go on.
Maybe just one thing which is very specific about serial killing. You said it. You kind of implied it. A serial killer has to commit separate events as a crime. So he goes out, he kills one person, and he has some kind of cooling off period in which he disposes of the body and he relives what he did, and after that period he may kill again. So he's not like a mass murder where it's just kill. He has a kind of pause between two accidents. So that's how you would describe a serial killing,
which makes sense.
And they always have a modus operandi, which is like a habit of working, if you want to put it in that term. So which weapon do they use, which victim do they prefer, where do they prefer to murder, etc.
Do they all, like, I think modus operandi is something that really helps find them, but I don't think every serial killer has them, right? Like, there are maybe they are harder to find. But in general, I think there are some that just like killing and just do it randomly and kill, like, random people, really.
The problem is that that would be considered two modus operandi. So so you would say, okay, this person is... the FBI has a huge catalog, like, is it an organized killer? Is it a disorganized killer? Is it a mixed version of the two? And they have little points like, how is the work situation? Where could they work? Are they employed at all?
Mm-hmm.
How often do they move? And they got really like a lot of categories which they go through. And you would say that somebody who kills seemingly at random has that point about him. And then you would look, well, what does he do with the bodies? When he hides them, it kind of shows that he thought about not getting caught, because he doesn't leave the body lying around. He wants to hide it. He wants to be not to be caught because somebody found it. So you say, I deduce something from this fact. And that's kind of the short version of what forensics and criminology would do in that kind of situation.
Okay, yeah.
So, but a question we already had, and which I found very, very funny, was I was, when I was preparing, I was thinking, well, why is it interesting? That's kind of a good question. Why is it so interesting? Because morally, you would not want to be near those people. You wouldn't want to say, oh, well, I think they're fine. They did a little oopsie-daisy. That's not what you would say. So why do you like reading about those things? That's kind of strange. So
it's really a good question. And yeah, like I said, I think it's, like, for me at least, it's just morbid curiosity, I think. Like, I don't want to... I wish this never happened. I don't want to be near those people.
No.
But I think it is kind of interesting of what they did and why they did it and in what way they did it. Like, there's something... And like I said, it just influenced so many horror movies. And, like, especially there's one guy we're probably going to bring up who influenced, like, basically... 90% of all horror movies are based on him. So yeah, let's go on.
Yeah, the funny part is I thought about it and I found a funny phrase. It goes that serial killers are celebrity monsters, and they are monsters in a adult kind of way. So when you are a child, monsters are real. There can be a boogeyman under the bed, but when you grow older, you kind of realize that serial killers are the closest thing to what a monster would be. Mm. So when you read those stories, for the first thing, they don't really feel real. So a lot of things I might later explain about what some serial killers did, they sound like they were only in a movie. Because they sound so crazy.
Sound like it's impossible that someone would actually do that and have the guts for it even.
Yeah, and I think that is why the name of a serial killer is often more prominent than the names of his victims. Because
sadly.
You kind of want to know who did it for two reasons. The first reason is you don't want to suffer the same fate as his victims did. So you better know the name. And you better know how he looks so you are not getting
away.
Yeah. And for the other hand, it's just it's the same thing with horror movies, and that's what I find so funny. You know the name of the monster. You're not really interested in the names of the people the monster eats.
Yeah.
So and I think that's the same kind of curiosity, the same kind of morbid fun in a really weird way you can have while reading their stories. Mostly, as I said, because they really don't feel real.
Yeah, that's true, yeah.
I also, as we, when we talked about the topic for the last podcast, I already brought up, hey, let's talk about serial killers, might be fun. And we both came to the conclusion, serial killers sound like a topic for a crime podcast, but not really for a horror podcast. So I thought about it. And of course, in crime fiction, in crime series, crime movies, there are a lot of serial killers. And it makes total sense because you want the mystery of the investigation, and a serial killer gives you more mystery because he has more victims. You get more to investigate. At the same time, I thought about, well, what other genres have serial killers? There's the thriller, obviously, because it's a bit more personal, it might get psychological. But then horror has its fair share of serial killers too.
Yeah.
So when you think about it, horror is like the perspective a victim really would have, because you see the horrific details of a murder, you see the gore, you see the helplessness of the people who are being chased, who are being hunted down. And literally any slasher movie, you could pick any one of them, has an uncompromising killer. It's always a killer. You cannot say something to him which would make him stop wanting to kill you.
Yeah.
And that's kind of the situation you would be when you are followed by a real serial killer, as you would imagine the situation.
Yeah.
At least that was what I thought. I don't know. You know more movies than me. So
yeah, but
maybe...
but that's true. Like mostly with these movies, like then again, you don't really think about them as the typical serial killer, because you have like Jason or Freddy or even Michael. They're more monsters than they are men. So you really think of them more like a ghost or like a monster than you would think of them as like a human killing other people. So it's, you could, I think as a viewer, at least for me, like for example, Jason, I would compare more to Godzilla than an actual killer.
Yeah.
That it's more of just like this unstoppable force. And, but I know where you're coming from, and that's actually true. Yeah. It's like, that's how you would feel when an actual serial killer would come to you. Like you would feel scared and, wonder if you could even get out of it, and I think most of the times people don't get out of it.
Yeah. The fun part is I'm kind of I'm seeing your opinion and I'm thinking, well, I share that, because when I think about Jason, when I think about Freddy, especially Freddy, I think with Freddy Krueger, it in the first movie, or I'm not quite sure where, but you get informed that when he was alive, when he was still a living person, he did murder several children. So you can, the film kind of tells you he's a serial killer. But now that he's dead and he's coming back, he's something else. He's more of a monster even. Yeah. And I find it funny because I also don't see them as serial killers, even when the film tells me that they were.
Yeah, exactly. It's really weird to think about. But yeah, still, you never think of them as like... You never think, I wish Freddy would end up in jail in the last
yes,
movie.
Yes, yes. You wouldn't say... Even with... I thought about Saw. Because I think the Saw franchise...
they make it out to... They always say he's technically not a serial killer.
Yeah, but they always use the term. So he's like... He has his own task force in the FBI who's hunting him down like an FBI task force would with a serial killer.
Yeah.
You've got the investigation part, but because it's so centered about the gore and about what really happens to the people, always looking through their eyes at their personal horrors, you wouldn't... I don't know. I had to think really, really hard to think of Jigsaw as a serial killer.
Even though you would... Like, he's probably the most norm, like the, especially other than these real movies that are about the serial killer.
Yeah.
He's like the one horror villain that's actually a serial killer.
Yeah, he's
and actually
not,
a normal human.
Yes, he's not supernatural in any way. So
even though his planning is
his planning is out of this world. It doesn't really make sense for him to plan things like that.
Yeah, but in general, yeah, he's... Even though, like, it's really funny how they always say in the movie, he's not a serial killer, he's always giving them a choice. Like,
he's giving them a choice, totally.
She has the choice. He can either cut up this other guy, or, like, die.
Yeah, that's what I wrote down, that it is funny when we see something that is humanoid in any kind of way. Like Jason. Jason is a humanoid, he's a person, but... We would hesitate to call it a serial killer, so serial killing seems to be a kind of human term.
Yeah.
So you wouldn't just call anything or anyone who looks human and kills a lot of people a serial killer. You would consider that term for somebody you actually consider to be a human just like you.
Yeah.
That's kind of what I find funny, because horror movies are not shy about taking inspiration from serial killers.
Yeah, not at all.
So that's a bit funny to me, honestly.
Yeah.
And you also got these Rob Zombie movies, like House of Thousand Corpses, where, I mean, they're serial killers. They live as a family, but they're serial killers. They take people, they cut them up, and they make funny projects out of it. And kind of the film is all around the act of killing and to hype These I wouldn't even say they are anti-heroes. I would just call them villains, to be honest.
Yeah, they're like more of it's always, you can always use the term they're the protagonist of the story.
Yeah, they're the protagonist.
That's probably where you should go here, because they're the bad guys for sure. But you root for the bad guys in these cases.
Yeah, which is really, really strange, because you would never do that in real life. But when you see it in a horror movie, it's just like, you can really, you can say, I want them to win because I find their victims annoying.
Yeah.
And that's often what horror movies do with victims. They make them annoying or they make them stupid.
You can't wait for them to die.
Yeah. And that's kind of funny to me, because even when you would read a story about an actual victim, you wouldn't say, well, she was stupid, so she probably deserved it.
Yeah.
But in movies, you can make that jump. You can say, okay, well, this is for my amusement. Nobody got hurt. So just have some fun with it.
Yeah. It's just a movie. It's not real.
Yeah.
So you can say that kind of stuff.
Yeah, it's there also are a lot of movies which kind of try to justify that the killer is like he is. So I'm thinking about there was a debate when Rob Zombie rebooted Halloween. Because people really, really hated that he tried to give a backstory to Michael Myers. They said, we don't need that. Because we had the first movie which told us that he's just plain evil. And he never speaks, he murders people when he's a child. He's not normal. He looks like a human, but he really is not.
Yeah, like, I think even in the first movie right away, now it's late. I can't think of his name right now, but the doctor,
Loomis,
he says like he has the darkest eyes I've seen.
Yeah.
Because it's the devil's eyes or something like that.
Yeah, right.
Joe is probably turning around right now where he's sitting and listening to this. But that's kind of how this quote goes.
Yeah, the funny part is the debate about is it nature or is it nurture is something that you do in criminology and in psychology all the time. Mm. Is it nature that a killer strikes or is it nurture? Is it really that he's from a bad home? That he was... brought to violence through his parents, through some abusive, I don't know, friends, friends, you wouldn't call them friends, but through abusive people in his surroundings.
So. I think often the nurture part is often like plays a role where you hear afterwards how these serial killers were abused as children or didn't really have anyone in their lives and that's what made them the way they are. But I think there are also these cases where you don't really know why they did it. They just did it.
There are interviews from a lot of serial killers where they are being asked, why did you do those things? When did you start wanting to do those things? And some of them don't really have an answer for you. Mm. It's just like some people just know they want to be an astronaut or just I want to be a gardener. They just know they want to do it. So they can't really answer you. And I think that's also kind of what creeps someone out when they hear about that.
Yeah. Yeah, it's totally true. And let's go on because I'm kind of...
You are blanking.
Yeah.
That's no problem because I have a big one
for you. Because
you have
a big list, yeah.
Yeah, I thought about what could I tell about serial killers who maybe influenced... some kind of horror movie, or I don't know. And the first one I came up with was, well, if you have seen any horror movie about a killer clown, it probably comes from John Wayne Gacy. So he's being famous for Pogo the Killing Clown.
Pogo the Clown.
Yeah.
There's pictures online, and it looks
fucking
creepy.
He looks so creepy. It's strange because I read that when he did the Pogo makeup, he made really sharp edges around his mouth and his eyes. I looked at the pictures and to me he kind of looks like a carved pumpkin and not really like a clown.
Yeah.
And other clowns did tell him that. So they told him you have to paint your face in another way because this will be scaring the kids. But he kind of didn't really care about
probably
that.
Probably liked it.
he probably liked it. I don't really know. But what was really funny to me, I knew him as a killer clown. And so I looked him up and he didn't really kill that much as a clown. So when you think about killer clowns, it's always, well, they in the movies, they kind of stab people or they shoot people or...
For the last few weeks, we've been talking about Terrifier.
Terrifier is a good example.
Because it's, for the most part of the movie, like it's a guy, he puts on his makeup as a clown and then goes out and starts killing people. So that's what you think of usually. But
Gacy didn't do that.
Yeah, Gacy was just a normal serial killer who also dressed up as a clown every now and then,
yeah,
right?
That's the fun part. He didn't really use his clown makeup or his clown costume at all. He sometimes used it to try and lure people in. So he was like, well, I'm a clown, I could show you some funny tricks. Maybe I show you my handcuff trick, which I come back later to because it is, I don't know, I read it and I thought, that is kind of funny, and then I thought, but it really happened, and then it creeped me out.
So what's the handcuff trick? Let's go there right away, yeah.
The handcuff trick was he had a pair of handcuffs, and because he was a clown, sometimes he did it in his costume, sometimes he just said, well, I'm a clown and I have this trick. Then he took his hands behind his back, he handcuffed himself. He showed that he just handcuffed himself. And then he told, well, and the trick is getting out of it. And there is a little secret to it. And then suddenly he was free. And he showed, look, the handcuffs are gone. I'm free. Do you want to try it? And the people, yeah, they thought, well, he's a clown. He's funny. Sure, let's try it. They tried it. He cuffed them behind their backs. And then he said, the secret is to have the key. And they couldn't get free. That was so... I thought, when I would see that in a movie, I would laugh, because I would find it very funny, but in the actual situation, to think that that happened is really creepy.
That's fucked up.
That's really fucked up,
like,
yeah.
You almost feel bad laughing, but also you kind of just have to when you hear that story.
Also, you know, you just see this big person who's dressed as a clown and who tells you, well, I'm a clown at children's parties and I'll show you this trick. You kind of believe that it's just a funny trick.
Yeah. And also, like, how many people are coming to you and saying, here's handcuffs, look, I put them on and now they're gone,
I'm free again. I'm free.
And then you think, okay, so there's a trick and he's gonna show me. Cool.
Let's try it. It's in good fun. And yeah, well, it really wasn't in good fun. So he killed 33 young men and boys. So that's not really a fun matter. And what I found a bit interesting, to say the least, is when you have serial killers in movies, or you have those people who are killer clowns, or it doesn't really matter. When you have these serial killers in movies, most of the time, their sexuality doesn't matter at all.
Mm-hmm.
They are just here to kill. They are not here to take any more pleasure than killing other people.
Mm-hmm.
And when you take Gacy, with Gacy, it wasn't about just killing somebody and feeling good that those people are dead. He had this sexual urge too. He wanted to dominate. He wanted he raped, I think, all of his victims, and he even raped some poor souls who got luckily they got away. They told on him, and people just didn't take them seriously.
Because they went out and said, like, I was raped by a giant clown, and then
no, they told one person told the police, well, he handcuffed me, I didn't want to be handcuffed, and he tried to rape me, but I could get away. And the police went out, they asked Gacy about that, and Gacy just calmly replied, yeah, well, we have a slave sex thingy going on, and he kind of got fed up with me, and now he wants to make me look bad, but that really was consensual, and he liked it too. And I didn't do anything to him. As you can see, he's walking away, he's fine. And the police believed him because he was a well-known member of the community, and well, he seems to be perverted because he's into guys, but that's about it. So that's maybe something we should say also. He killed in the 70s. So the thing about being gay in the 70s was that you kind of wanted not everybody to know, and you didn't they didn't take you that seriously when you told on your gay lover, because that was just something, well, you don't want to be in touch with that topic at all.
Yeah.
So I think that's something that made it easier for him.
Yeah, I think also because, like, lots of these of the gay meetings happened, like, in private place, or like a bit away from the general public. So of course it was easier to meet men and lure them into your house, because it had to be a secret.
Yeah, he also before he was killing, he also just sexually assaulted someone and then blackmailed them, or he persuaded them to do something and then blackmailed them and said, I'm gonna tell everybody that you're gay. And then those people were kind of, they needed to, they owed him. And so they let him do some stranger things to them, which they weren't really okay with. And that kind of escalated into killing someone. The strange part was he killed, as he tells the story, he killed the first victim by mistake, actually. He woke up and he saw this young man in his house, which he invited over. And this young man had a knife in his hand. And Gacy, I'm not sure if he is lying on that one, to be honest, but he told that he thought, well, this guy is going to kill me and is going to rob me, so I'm gonna have to defend myself. And they struggled, and then he stabbed the victim.
Mm-hmm.
And when he got out of his room, he saw that the victim was just making breakfast, and he was cutting up, I don't know what it was, oranges, something like that. He was just cutting up stuff. and he came into his room to wake him up because he wanted to say the dinner is ready. And after that, he didn't step anymore. He just, I think he asphyxiated them mostly.
Okay.
And which kind of, I found it a bit strange because when I think about killer clowns in horror movies, they always stab people. So that's kind of the strange part. So horror movies took the clown makeup because they thought, well, that is scary. And it's kind of scary that it is a real thing. There was a real killer clown. But then they made it bloodier. And they left out the sexual thing altogether because that is just too close to comfort. So you don't really want to hear or see that.
Yeah, also for the most part, I think you don't want to make exactly... You don't... Well, you do sometimes. But most of the time, I think you don't want to do a horror movie about the serial killer as a horror movie. That would be like... Like if you made like a movie about John Wayne Gacy, you'd probably go more with a biopic kind of story. And you wouldn't go with the crazy killer clown movie.
Yeah.
So maybe they decided they also want to stay away and just like not really acknowledge that there's an actual person behind it.
I think that's also, it would kind of be in poor taste to just show a horror movie in which John Wayne Gacy is like the protagonist and people are voting for him to kill more boys because you kind of know that is really what happened and you don't want to do that. So
yeah, in the... Like, I was really worried for a little while because Tarantino is making a movie right now that's... When he first started talking about it, he said it's about the what's his name? The Manson killings.
Ah, yeah.
And that wouldn't work because we all know what kind of writing Tarantino does.
Yeah.
And... It would be kind of fucked up to have him do the actual Manson movie because that movie would be fun and you don't want that movie to be fun. But now he backtracked. He said it's not about the Manson family. It's just set in the same time in Hollywood. So he kind of backtracked and it's still at the same time. I think the killing of Sharon Tate is like still happening, but like in a different context, I think. Because I can't. Like the closest to historical events that he did so far was like in Inglourious Basterds when they killed Hitler, which didn't happen. So like that and that's something that's a long time ago and that's like they killed Hitler. That's like
that's not really that sad.
That's a better thing than going about like Sharon Tate because some of her family are still alive and. That would be in really poor taste.
Yeah, you wouldn't want to see... I mean, let's be honest. Those movies are for people older than 18, older than 21. But the young people are really the fan base of those movies. Yeah. They want to see them. And I can imagine that there are a lot of, I don't know, teenagers or young people who would try to dress up or who would... think that, oh, those murderers are really, really cool. And that's just... That's not what you want to do with a movie like that. I also wrote down... I didn't do as much research for them, but I also wrote down Charles Manson and the family because the funny part I always thought was a lot of people call Manson the serial killer because of those murders, but he wasn't there.
I think in general, like you can say, he didn't personally kill anyone.
No.
He always just made his family, his people do it.
He sent them out and he told them, well, you've got to do something about those people. And they did the dirty work for him.
Yeah. For anyone who's interested in his story, there's a great podcast called You Must Remember This podcast, which is... Well, the official statement she always does is, the host, is always, it's about the secret and or forgotten history of Hollywood's first century. And she usually does like these, what did she do, like the Star Wars, which is about the stars at the time of the war. So like in the 30s, like how Charlie Chaplin was handled and when he did The Great Dictator and that kind of stuff. And doing all these interesting stories. But she also did a whole series. Like she always goes like a series of like, I don't know, 20 episodes maybe. And she did one about the Manson killings. She didn't fully follow just the Manson family. She's always like about stars at the time, because the Manson family was pretty big in Hollywood. Like, that's where they went around. And we also get like a few episodes talking about like Sharon Tate and her her family. And sometimes episodes are just like something that happened at the same time or was kind of related. Not every episode goes fully on the Manson family, but still it's really, really interesting to hear. And that's where I got most my knowledge of the of his killings.
Yeah, why I wrote them down is because I think that when you have you have the Manson family, and you also have a man named Richard Ramirez, which was famous under the nickname the Night Stalker, because he also broke into people's home and murdered them there. And a lot of time he was really brutal, so he just beat people to death or just stabbed them violently. And I think that those two are good examples for what the horror movie of a home invasion is made up to be. Because those movies, like The Strangers, you have a murderer, you don't know this person. The person mostly comes at night. They get into your home uninvited. They often cut your phone line, which the Manson family also did when they got around to Sharon Tate's house.
Yeah.
So I think that a lot of these home invasions are inspired by real home invasions, and they kind of saw what those killers did, and they took it to a non-personal level, because you have those killers you don't know. In The Strangers, it's three killers, you don't know the killers.
Yeah.
It's two people where you don't really know the people either.
Even the first Purge movie, like not the first Purge, but the Purge the movie, Purge the movie. First one.
Yeah.
Is also basically a home invasion movie.
Yeah, that's right.
In general, the Manson family also did this crazy thing at first, where before they started killing everyone, they just broke into houses.
Yes.
And just went there and then left again. And like,
yeah.
I think like gave people an eerie feeling, because there's something of like they moved something and...
Yes, they moved furniture around a bit.
Just a bit. That it feels like maybe I've just forgotten that I've moved this. But like they didn't like turn around a chair or something. They just moved it a bit. Or like, you know, like putting the remote on the other side of the table.
Yeah, little
something
things.
Something like that just makes you feel really, really creeped out.
Yeah, you kind of know that somebody was there, and that hurts your feeling of security. Because in your home, you are secure.
Usually,
and the horror is that somebody took control over this secure place.
Yeah, that's suddenly kind of... you're not even your home is safe. Yeah. Where are you safe?
Yeah, right. Then I've got a little one. I'm just going to name him, because I think most of the time he kind of gets forgotten. His name is Albert Fish, and he's a serial killer who brought the BDSM kink into the story, because he was a masochist. And there is a... when you look him up, there you often find this x-ray from his nether region? Nether region?
Yeah.
The part, the down
probably
part of your
his
body.
His colon.
Yeah, his colon. Thank you. And he put a lot of needles and nails and stuff inside him, because he got up... I don't know, he liked that. But the problem was, he also liked to torture people, and he mostly did it with really, really young children. So 10 years and younger.
Uh-huh.
And... He got convicted for 3 murders, but he claimed that I have children in every state, which kind of left to the imagination how many people he might also have hurt and have tortured.
Yeah.
So I think that Fish was a very, very strange man apart from this, because he did some things like just grab a carpet around himself. And then wander the house and tell his children or his wife or his relatives that the holy John told me to wear this just as he did. And then he walked out, or when there was a full moon, he was suddenly convinced that he needs to howl like a werewolf. So he just got off all his clothes and he walked out naked to howl at the moon. So okay. So it was really, really crazy. And I think that some horror movies might take inspiration from his really, really hard BDSM. It's just, that's not even anymore what BDSM means. He just, he kind of used BDSM as an alibi to live out something way, way worse.
Yeah. Okay.
And then the combination with, he really was crazy. He saw things, he heard voices. And those combinations you also often find in horror movies. I don't think he's that famous. I'm not quite sure.
I haven't
sure.
heard of him before.
Yeah, so he sometimes he is just, yeah, well, the people just forget about him, but I think that's kind of a part where some horror movies get that idea. I'm not quite sure.
Yeah,
it might be. And then, well, you've already mentioned him in the beginning. We have Ed Gein. He's kind of the superstar in horror movies.
Even though, if I heard right, like officially, like what's officially known for sure is that I'm not sure if he killed anyone, like officially. I think officially, like he went to jail because like he digged up some bodies yeah. and did horrible things to them. But like, I think officially, even like in the conviction, I think he said afterwards that he killed lots of people. But like, I think. Proven is only that he like raped already dead bodies. Like
I thought that too. He actually killed two women.
Okay.
But it was kind of funny to me that the most recited serial killer of all time. I mean, just the thing to think that he only killed two women, but he's like. The father of nearly every horror movie ever.
Yeah, just a few examples if you don't know. Like, he's the inspiration for the Texas Chainsaw Massacre, for Psycho.
For Buffalo Bill in Silence of the Lambs. Was there.
Yeah, it's because what he did, but he mostly did it to, like, dead bodies. Yeah. So, like, I think that's what he built furniture out
yeah.
of people.
He made
masks, he made dresses. So
yeah, he went to graveyards, dug up graves, and he took sometimes he took whole bodies, sometimes he just took the skin or just some kind of just some part of the body, and then he made himself a home. And I quite literally mean it. He made furniture. He made like a lamp from human flesh. He made like I think chairs or
yeah,
or
I
something
think chairs out of bones.
Like that. Yeah, and also did instead of leather, he just used human skin again. He had a belt from sewn together human nipples, so just to wear, which was really, really. How would you even think of that? He also he collected female genitalia in a shoebox, and it was later. I don't know if he himself said it or if the people just thought, well, that is what makes logically the most sense, but they believed him to make a woman's suit,
yeah,
to get inside the skin of,
yeah, because he wanted to be a woman basically.
Yeah,
like
I think he wanted to be his mother in specific.
Mm-hmm. And that's like where we like with the whole furniture things, most people don't think about that when they think of the Texas Chainsaw Massacre. But when that movie starts, it's about like the main characters drive to this cemetery because someone dug out the bodies and used them. That's often forgotten, but that's like the start of the movie.
Yeah.
And then we of course get to the whole family. That's also like the main character then goes at some point to the house that is full of like furniture out of bones and like, yeah, of course Leatherface has
yeah.
a mask of people.
That's and something Ed Gein also did. So he kind of skinned people's faces and tried to use that as a mask. So that's where Leatherface
yeah.
comes from.
Yeah, exactly. Then yeah, like we said, Psycho, he like kept his mother in his basement, and I think he also did like
I don't think he kept his mother, but he was, the funny part is, I at least as I read it, Robert Block lived just a few miles away, I think about 30 miles away, and his book came out about 2 years after Ed Gein was arrested. So he was like, he had nearly written the novel to its end, and then he heard about Ed Gein. And the fun part is he says that he didn't really read much about the case. He heard about it, and then he kind of made, I think at the end of the book or at one of the last chapters, he kind of makes some kind of wordplay or something. He kind of allures to the case of Ed Gein, but he never really just, it wasn't that interesting to him. And just a long time after he finished the book and people told him, well, that's kind of eerie because it seems like you wrote about Ed Gein. He read about him and he said, oh, it's kind of strange how similar those cases are. Because in Bloch's novel as well, the mother behaves in a way that Ed Gein's mother did too. She was very religious. She beat her children when they wanted to talk to other people, when they wanted to do something she considered sinful. So it's really creepy to think that a lot of psycho actually would have played out the same way, but Ed Gein just in huge quotation marks just murdered two people
officially. I think he even said that he killed more, but never found out.
They kind of believe that he killed, he might have killed his brother. He had an older brother, and the older brother didn't like the mother as much as Edward did, and they believe that he kind of got rid of his brother after they had a fight.
Okay.
So maybe that's the person he means when he says I killed more people, but I'm not quite sure.
Yeah.
It's a bit...
Okay, so
I got a lot more, but I mean we have talked so much, I'm not sure how much time we have.
I think we're good for today. We talked about like probably the biggest.
Yeah, I think.
Right, like
there's maybe one thing.
Yeah.
Because we talked about a lot of men, and it's not a male thing only. So we have a lot of female serial killers too. They're not as common, but you could argue that maybe they're not as common because we don't really recognize them as such. Because they tend to use more subtle ways to kill you. So maybe they just get caught that often, or maybe they don't murder more than two people, and so they like escape the system and just go down as she killed two people and not more, so she's not a serial killer yet. And what I found funny is that we have one prolific serial killer, which is the Countess Elizabeth Bathory, and she killed a lot of young girls. She would make an excellent figure for a horror movie, and she mostly does. She's in, I don't know if you've seen that one, she's in Stay Alive.
No, I haven't.
She's like the main villain in that movie. And the fun part is, not only in this movie, but in every horror movie she's a part of, she's always like not a human being, but she comes back as a ghost. She comes back as a vampire. She comes back as there is no history piece or no history horror movie. Like you could think, well, why don't you just make a horror movie about this person? She also liked to torture the young girls. She did it in very, very bad ways, which I'm not going into right now, but she like put needles under their fingernails and such things. So really, really,
yeah, let's start.
but you know, like there were rumors about her when she was when it was clear that somehow always the young girls, when they go to her castle, they kind of vanish.
So what time are we talking about? Because
she was in the, let me just look that up. She was she lived in 1560 till 1640. So
in a kind of different time.
Yeah,
like,
it's a different time.
The FBI didn't know.
she was in Hungary too, so the FBI wouldn't look at her at all, even if it was a later time. But she most surely she did kill those young girls. But after the people noticed that young girls are missing and they go missing when they were, when they visited her, they tried to get her into court, and she was, she wasn't really in court because she was a countess. You couldn't do that, but she was, incarcerated in her own castle, and they didn't send up any more girls for her. So she kind of was behind bars, if you want to say it like that.
Yeah.
But a long time after she was dead, people started rumors and started talking about how she bathed in the blood of her victims and how she had like the, those vampiristic, yeah, attributes, that she drank the blood, that she did all kind of funny stuff with it.
Oh yeah, there's always these stories about like bathing in the blood of virgin girls,
that's,
and then you stay young.
Right, that's where it comes from.
Ah,
so
okay.
That's her. And so she kind of is in a lot of horror movies, but never for the things she actually did, but for the things other people told about her.
Yeah.
Because that she really bathed in blood, there's no real evidence for it.
So this is kind of like Vlad the Impaler, who then turned into Dracula,
yes,
basically.
Yes, right. That's like the female version of it.
Yeah, okay.
She also is named Countess Dracula for it. That's
well,
nickname.
Yeah, you said she's kind of like a vampire, so yeah.
Yeah, but she never gets portrayed as a human, so you don't find historic horror movies where she's the bad killer.
Yeah, okay.
That's nothing people would do for some. I don't even know why I would watch it, to be honest.
Maybe because they can't go into the police investigation and
maybe it's that.
Yeah, maybe that kind of way. And also, like, you I think even still with serial killer movies, you want kind of a bad ending.
Yeah.
For the serial killer. Like, not in these, like, slashers where it's actually about the killer. But if it's about an actual person, you kind of want to get some comeuppance. And if the comeuppance is, well, then they just stopped sending girls towards her.
That's a bit, well, I'm not quite sure, but I think they built her in her own tower, so they didn't let her out anymore, and they left her there. But I'm not really sure on that one, because the sources differ on what really happened to her.
That's
so
kind of
a bit,
problem with the 1500s. Yeah,
yeah. you don't have an accurate presentation.
I'm not that sure of my ages, but I think they're like still called the Dark Ages for a reason. Or was that before
The Dark Ages are a bit before that.
Oh, okay.
I would say.
Yeah, okay.
But yeah, you can take it inside there too, because it was a really dark age when a woman just could. I never mentioned her killing count, but people honestly say that she killed 650 girls.
That's
a really big killing count.
Yeah, and it took very long for them to notice that every time they send a girl, never comes back.
Yes, I'm not believing that one. I think that the same people who told stories about her being a vampire just made up some numbers.
Yeah, just
because
made them a big higher.
Yeah, I can't imagine that after the 600th girl was sent up there, people still didn't catch on.
Also, in general, like, as a countess, she had like a big of a reach, but was it that big of a reach? Like, this can't be happening. So was this happening over 20 years, or was this like
it was a longer time period? But you have to say that for the longest time she lived up there and she didn't kill nobody. so it was all good. Then her husband died, and after her husband died, she kind of seemed to get a bit weird. And I'm not sure if she had any tendencies to torture or to hurt people before that, but she always was a bit brutal and a bit I'm not sure how to call it. She let the girls comb her hair, and when the girls did something wrong or it like hurt a bit when they combed through her hair, she got violent. She started hurting the girls. She started cussing at them, and then I don't think what else. I don't know what else. So she had a bit of a temper, but she didn't outright kill anybody for the things. And then after her husband died, the people say that then it started, or then it got a lot worse. So
okay,
she didn't have that much time.
Yeah, so it, so like getting 650 girls, that's like a lot of girls you need to get to your castle, and like you're not doing like one a day maybe, but
no.
So it's not in 2 years, but yeah, it's still a crazy high number.
It's crazy high, yes.
So, yeah, I think that was, like, we can do another episode at some point.
Yeah, sure.
you always love coming back. So, and, of course, I really love having you, because it's always a fun time to talk to you about horror. But it's also fun to talk to Joe about horror. So I'm glad that he's coming back next week. But, yeah, once again, thank you for being here very much. And we'll have you again sometime.
Thank
for
you.
Sure. And for anyone listening, thank you again for listening, even if Joe isn't here. And yeah, send us an email at ihohpodcast@gmail.com. You can find us at ihohpodcast on Instagram, on Twitter, on Facebook, everywhere, I think. And just send us a message. Let us know who's your favorite serial killer. And yeah, Joel will be back next week, and then we'll have a fun reunion. Thank you for listening, and yeah, see you next week.